chapter 5 of Canto 1, verse number 25. Uchishta lepa narumodito dvijai sakrin smabunje tarapasta kilvishaha evam pravittasya vishuddha chetasas tadharma evatma ruchik prajayate. Please repeat. Uchishta lepa. The remnants of foodstuff. Anumoditaha.
Anumoditaha.
Being permitted. Dvijahi. By the Vedantist Brahmanas. Sakrit. Once upon a time. Sma. In the past. Bunje. Took. Tat.
By that action.
Apasta.
Eliminated.
Kilbishaha.
All sins.
Evam.
Thus.
Pravrittasya,
pravrittasya,
being engaged,
Vishuddha
chetasaha,
of one whose mind is purified,
tat,
that particular,
dharmaha.
Nature.
Eva.
Certainly.
Atma ruchihi.
Transcendental attraction.
Prajayate.
Was manifested.
Translation. Only once, by their permission, I took the remnants of their food, and by so doing all my sins were at once eradicated. Thus being engaged, I became purified in heart. And at that time, the very nature of the transcendentalist became attractive to me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Pure devotion is as much infectious, in a good sense, as infectious diseases. A pure devotee is cleared from all kinds of sins. The personality of Godhead is the purest entity, and unless one is equally pure from the infection of material qualities, one cannot become a pure devotee of the Lord. The Bhakti Vedantas, as above mentioned, were pure devotees, and the boy became infected with their qualities of purity by their association, and by eating once the remnants of the foodstuff taken by them. Such remnants may be taken even without permission of the pure devotees. There are sometimes pseudo-devotees, and one should be very much cautious about them. There are many things which hinder one from entering devotional service. But by the association of pure devotees, all these obstacles are removed. The neophyte devotee becomes practically enriched with the transcendental qualities of the pure devotee, which means attraction for the personality of Godheads, name, fame, qualities, pastimes, etc. Infection of these qualities of the pure devotee means to imbibe the taste of pure devotion always in the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. This transcendental taste at once makes all material things distasteful. Therefore, a pure devotee is not at all attracted by material activities. After the elimination of all sins or obstacles on the path of devotional service, one can become attracted. One can have steadiness. One can have perfect taste. One can have transcendental emotions. And at last, one can be situated on the plane of loving service of the Lord. All these stages developed by the association of pure devotees, and that is the purpose of this stanza. Prabhupada mentions in the purport how there may be many obstacles. I took off my glasses to see if I can read it. Anyway, there may be many obstacles in the way of making progress in devotional service. Maybe we have experienced some obstacles ourselves. But Prabhupada points out in the purport, because the point is made in the story, that all these obstacles can be very easily removed by the association of pure devotees. The purer, the better. If you associate with very pure devotees, then the potency will be very strong, and one can easily transcend all sorts of obstacles. Narada himself experienced severe obstacles. He was a well-situated Gandharva, living on the higher planets, and he got himself cursed because of a simple aparad. He got himself cursed to take birth as the son of a Shudrani, of a maidservant. Very low birth. There are many people who have the prejudiced idea that you have to have a good birth to practice devotional service. That low-class people cannot. I won't mention who it actually was, or even what Sampradaya, but there's one Vaishnavacharya, not our Sampradaya, who was concerned, this was some 20 years ago, he was concerned how the Antyajas, the Harijans, outcasts in South India, some of them were becoming Muslims, just to get themselves a better position in society. They were converting to Islam. And this upset him, this Vaishnava Sannyasi Acharya. So he went to the same village where five or six Harijans became Muslim, and he reconverted them back to Hindus. You know, convinced them to become Hindus again. Made a big show of it, made a big program. Some ISKCON devotees were invited to attend the program, because he was a friend of ISKCON. And when he reinitiated them as, reintroduced them to Hinduism, I don't know, he didn't give them diksha, but he did something, some ceremony to make them Hindus again. He gave them all pictures of Lord Mahadev, Lord Shiva. He's the Vaishnavacharya. But he took these Harijans with the assumption, they're Harijans, low-class people. They can't worship Vishnu, so I'll encourage them to worship Lord Shiva instead. And he gave them pictures of Lord Shiva and sent them on their way. But this is a prejudice. I'm not naming names who it was. A prejudice, a misconception, that if your birth is low, if you're a Shudra or worse, then you're not allowed to worship Vishnu. You're not fit to worship Vishnu. You have to take a higher birth. If you're a good street sweeper, maybe you'll take your birth as a Shudra the next life, and after that a Vaishya, and after that a Kshatriya, and after that you'll be a Brahmana after four lifetimes. And then when you become a Brahmana, then you can worship Vishnu. Many people are thinking like that, especially the Brahmanas, so-called Brahmanas in Kali Yuga. That they're so proud of their birth, and they think anybody who wasn't born a Brahman cannot be a proper devotee of Vishnu.
But the Padma Purana says, Vaishnave jati buddhi yasyava naraki saha.
Someone who judges a Vaishnava according to his jati, he's worse than the residents of hell. He's so unfortunate, so bewildered. The people who live in hell are better conditions than such a person. If he's so prejudiced, so foolish to think that a person of a low birth cannot be a Vaishnava. So Narada, he had this disadvantage. Born of an ignorant mother in a contemptible family. Not respectable. And usually low class people have bad association. They don't behave nicely. And therefore they usually don't. Can't engage in pure service to God because of their bad habits. They're indulging in intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, and that just makes it very difficult. The mind is disturbed, the body is unclean, and then it's not easy to worship God or even think about worshiping God. So Narada had this disadvantage of his bad birth. But he overcame it very easily, very quickly. We're reading here about the sadhana performed by Narada Muni. It didn't take him 30 or 50 years. In a few weeks, he went through the whole program of Krishna consciousness from beginning to end. In a few weeks. The guests were there during the Chaturmasya. Maximum 4 months, 16 weeks. He finished the whole course. Before they left, he had already attained prema. In 16 weeks, or maybe only a few weeks. So very quickly and very easily he achieved perfection simply on the strength of the association of pure devotees. And we read here how he associated with them. It's not that he, grabbed for their feet and demanded, give me your blessings. This is not the best way to associate with Vaishnavas. Scrape the dust off their feet and give them all your karma. And then ask for blessings on top of that. Narada didn't approach them like that. He came without asking anything. He did the service that his mother appointed him to do. He served very nicely. And then they were pleased with him and they let him take the Uchishta Lepan. Respectable families in India, the mother teaches the children, don't take Uchishta off of anybody's plate and don't give any yours to anybody else. But among Vaishnavas, this rule is not obeyed. Those Vaishnava sannyasis, they let Narada take the Uchishta, the remnant off their plates. And that awakened his attraction to Krishna. He's already making progress by his service attitude. And now they gave him a breakthrough. Here, take some prasad. Of course, it was offered to Krishna. They don't eat, these rishis were not eating anything that they didn't offer to Lord Narayana. But it's double prasad. Offered to Narayana and then it's been touched by the mouth of the devotees. Maha Maha Prasad. And Narada got some of that. What happened? His Atma Ruchi was awakened because of that. This is already an advanced stage in devotional service. Prabhupada mentions the stages in the purport. Okay. After the elimination of all sins or obstacles on the path of devotional service, one can become attracted. One can have steadiness. So, anartanivritti means giving up all your sinful, deviant, dishonest attitudes and behavior, straightening out your life. That is anartanivritti, giving up all dishonesty and illicit behavior. When that is accomplished, one attains nishtha, or firm conviction and dedication to the process of devotional service. At that stage, your perfection is practically guaranteed. Practically nothing can stop you once you achieve Nishta. It is the beginning of real pure devotional service. Up to that, one is just a tentative candidate, and he can be dragged away by Maya. But when you attain Nishta, Maya can't get you anymore. Except in rare cases. There may be some temporary deviation, as in the case of Bharat Maharaj, who had progressed up to the stage of Bhava and he fell down for 3 lifetimes. But then he came back and finished his devotional business. It wasn't a complete permanent fall down, just a temporary detour for 3 lifetimes. But normally, if you attain Nishta, you won't fall down. Nishta means firm faith. Yasmin stitto na dukena gurunapi vichalyate, as Krishna describes in the Gita. When you attain that firm determination and dedication, then even the most severe misery cannot distract you or dissuade you from your progress in devotional service. No matter what happens to you, you won't give up your devotional practice. All the hounds in hell, all the illusions that Maya can dream up, cannot stop you from your determination to continue practicing the service of Krishna. That is Nishta. And then one develops attraction. That is the next stage that Narada is achieving. He achieves simply by taking the prasadam of the great devotees. Just by getting the prasadam off of their plate. And ruchi, and then rati is the next stage. Asakti is what's usually called. Asakti, rather. Ruchi and then asakti. They both can be translated as attraction. But there's a difference. One is attraction to the process of devotional service. That is the first stage. That is what Narada is achieving now. But higher than that, the next stage after that, is to become attracted to Krishna as a person. Specifically attraction to Krishna himself. That's asakti. That develops when it intensified, it develops into transcendental ecstasy and then prema. Once you become fully attracted to Krishna, obsessed with Krishna, you fall in love with Krishna, then prema is right around the corner, perfection of life. But before that, you first of all become attracted to the practice of serving Krishna, to the process. That is called ruchi, getting a taste. Advanced stage, it's beyond that last gateway you have to go through of giving up all your anarthas and attaining firm faith. Beyond that, you get this attraction. First to the process and then to Krishna himself. So Narada is going through all these stages very quickly, in a matter of weeks, and without having to go through a whole rigmarole. He didn't have to memorize a list of 64 or 128 or 10,000 offenses. He wasn't thinking about that. He wasn't thinking, how to touch his body this way and that way and throw the water this way and that way and so many, calisthenics and tricks. His sadhana was so simple. Basically associate with the Vaishnavas and serve them. And then the next stage is that they invite him to listen to the Krishna Katha that they were discussing among each other. They invited the boy to sit in and listen. And then listening to Krishna Katha, that became his main sadhana. If he did anything else, it was only secondary. Narada, he does teach, and later when he became perfect, he wrote Narada Pancharatra, a textbook on how to practice devotional service. So the devotional practice that Narada describes in his own Pancharatra is more complicated than that. He does describe how to chant mantras properly, how to purify your body and your mind by Nyasa and Mudra. Nyasa means you chant different syllables of the mantra, one at a time, touching different fingers in different parts of your body, and saying the different syllables of a mantra. and then mudras, you know, different hand gestures. And you go through this procedure. It's like we chant the Brahma, those who have second initiation, we chant Gayatri Mantra every day. How long do you take to chant the Gayatri Mantra? Maybe 4 or 5 minutes. But if you follow the whole procedure taught by Narada in the Pancharatra, it'll take you at least 45 minutes to go to get ready to do all the preliminaries before you can chant your Gayatri. You know, and then you're supposed to go take a bath in the Ganga and offer oblations to all the forefathers, your forefathers and all the sages, and chant mantras to them too. So the whole thing can take an hour and a half just to do your you know, noontime oblations and Gayatri Mantra. We don't have time for that. If our devotees took an hour and a half for each Gayatri, three times 44 and a half hours a day, the preaching would slow down considerably. And everything else we're doing. We're too busy for it. So even though it was taught by Narada, we have a simplified process. Narada himself, his practice was very simple. He served the devotees, got some of their prasadam, then sat down and listened to the Bhagavatam every day, or the discussion about Krishna. And he developed love of God just by that. If we had an attraction to hear about Krishna, if we had a real attraction to hear, we would not need to do anything else. We wouldn't have to worry about any other rules and regulations. Tava karmani kuravita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shravana dalva yavam shradana jayate. We're working. Some of us are working jobs. Some of us are working for free in the temple. But most of us are working. Very few of us are just sitting and chanting all day. And the devotees who do nothing but chant all day, everyone else is thinking there's something wrong with them. You know, a devotee who takes all day to chant his rounds and doesn't do any service, we assume that he's in some sort of trouble. You know, devotees who are properly situated, they're working very hard, doing something. We're working. I thought Krishna consciousness was about this remembering Krishna. It is in the very mature state. But Prabhupada said, first work now, samadhi later, was one thing he told some of his disciples. Samadhi, you can sit down in samadhi and stop all activities and just think about Krishna later on. When you're 90 years old, and you know, your body is useless for any, and your mind is, you're senile and you can't remember anything, and you're too weak to do anything, too sick, then you can sit down and meditate. Or rather, to be more serious about it, when we're actually very advanced in Krishna consciousness, then we can actually consider stopping all other activity except for simply remembering Krishna. And even sometimes the devotees who are fit to do that, they don't. Srila Prabhupada was certainly fit to sit and only meditate about Krishna and do nothing else. But he was doing that for some time in Vrindavan, focusing very intensely on remembering Krishna. But then he left Vrindavan at the age of 70-something and went to preach all over the world and didn't stop to the end of his life, running all over the world. He didn't stop to sit and meditate, even for a few minutes. So voluntarily, a devotee for the preaching service may forego, even though he's earned the privilege, to just sit and remember Krishna. He'll keep himself busy instead because he thinks that that's more important. Narada himself doesn't stay in one place for more than 3 minutes. Normally. He was cursed like that. Twice. By Daksha Prajapati, because Narada convinced 15,000 of Daksha's sons altogether to take sannyas against the wishes of their father. Yes, Prabhu? Well, there was two. There was first the Ayashras and then the Sabalashras. So the total number is 11,000? Okay, 11?
10,000
more. 1,000 more. Okay, Gyara Hazar. a lot of voice. Now, if the Hare Krishna steal one child from a family, the family is up in arms. And Narada stole 11,000 sons from the same father. And an influential man. You know, suppose, you know, the young boy and his father is, you know, a member of parliament. And he joins the Hare Krishna. The father can make a big stink. Cause a lot of trouble for the Hare Krishnas. Daksha Prajapati was more important than that. One of the most important people in the universe. And he cursed Narada for that. Cursed him that he could never stay in one place. And then the other time, although it's in a story, it's actually just fiction. It's not meant as history, but as a story. Narada was cursed by old age personified. She was looking for a husband, and nobody wanted this old age Jara. Old age personified. Nobody wanted to marry her. And she approached Narada finally. And he refused. He wouldn't marry anybody. What does it make of old age personified? And she cursed him again, the same curse. That you won't be able to stay in one place. So Narada never stays. He's constantly wandering around. And he likes it. He likes to travel and preach. And Prabhupada comments in his purport that I've been cursed similarly by the parents of my disciples. And therefore I'm never staying in more than one place for a few days. But we see that it doesn't have to take your whole lifetime. It doesn't necessarily have to take decades to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. If you're fortunate and if you're really serious, you can do it in a few weeks. Or, looking at it collectively, ISKCON can save the world. It doesn't have to take generations, lifetimes. Prabhupada commented in one lecture, the Pandavas, they conquered the kingdom of the earth in 18 days, battle of Kurukshetra. ISKCON can also take over the world in 18 days. It can spread like wildfire, but we're not serious enough. If we were serious, if we were really fully dedicated, we could take over the whole world in 18 days. Anyway, we haven't done that yet. 18 days, much more than 18 days are over. But we haven't taken over, we haven't done much toward taking over the world. We shouldn't be discouraged about it, but we should be confident. It doesn't have to take forever to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. The obstacle is our own dishonesty, our own laziness, our own lack of faith. We give up, we rectify that, and then we can make good progress fast. Even if we're not very confident that we're going to do that, even if we expect it's going to be a long, long struggle in our own cases, still we should be at least confident that we can reach the goal eventually. Maybe not even in this lifetime. Maybe we'll have to finish it in another lifetime. But it's worth being patient and taking as long as it takes. And this is the process to attain pure love of God. And in the state of pure love of God, all of your desires are satisfied. Although the actual nature of prema or pure love is that you have no concern for your own happiness. Krishnadas Kaviraj explains this, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains it. Krishnadas Kaviraj is conveying to us what Chaitanya has taught. That love actually means that you only are concerned for the happiness of the person you love. You don't care about your own happiness. And people who actually care about their own happiness and call it love, what they're practicing is not love but lust. kama. You're using other people for your happiness and calling it love. That is material perversion. The real thing is complete selflessness. That's pure love. But it can be achieved when you attain that state of pure love, although you don't have any thought of yourself being happy. You're ready to go to hell for Krishna's happiness. But Krishna arranges, he reciprocates, and he sees to it that we're happy, even though we're ready to give up our happiness. Krishna sees that we're enjoying more than anybody else. Even though on the outside it looks like we're miserable. Krishna's devotees may seem miserable, they may seem poor and useless people, but actually on the inside they're the most satisfied, most fulfilled. Simply, even if they're not doing anything else right, simply by the virtue of having love for Krishna. Even if in the eyes of the ordinary people of the world, they're failures, they're actually the greatest successes. That love, attaining love of God is the real success of life. And it's the real source of satisfaction. So Narada is giving us a quick course. He's giving us his own example, and he's showing us how it can be done very quickly, very easily. The process does not have to be hard. And it's a simple thing. Serve devotees. Take their prasadam. Listen to their discourses about Krishna. That's basically it. If you can do that, you don't have to do anything else. People have the wrong conception of spiritual life. They want to grab onto the feet of the sadhus, grab the dust off their feet, and demand blessings. And I think getting this magic wand waved right over your head, blessings, is going to change your life. There was one incident. Prabhupada was traveling on a train, I think in South India, and two or three disciples were with him. First class compartment, so there was some privacy. And one of the old, there aren't many first class bogies left in India. It's all AC or sleeper class now. But it used to be, first class, second class. And before that, before I came to India, before I was born, they used to have third class and even fourth class bogies. In the first class compartment, not AC, but private. Prabhupada was staying with a few disciples, but they had the door open because the disciples were going out to do some service to get something from Prabhupada, so they couldn't keep the door shut all the time. And there were two young men traveling in the same bogie in a different compartment, and they were very curious. They wanted to meet the sadhu, and they were wandering up and down the hall trying to poke in their faces inside the door. They knew if Prabhupada saw them, he would invite them in. And one sannyasi, another disciple, were trying to keep these young men away so the Prabhupada wouldn't see them. Just chasing them away. But finally, they did. Prabhupada saw them in the hallway. And he invited them in. Because they were obviously curious to meet him. So he invited them in to meet. And he said, "What can we do for you?" And the two young men, students or something, they said, "Oh, Swamiji, we just wanted to get your blessings." So Prabhupada laughed, and he said, "You see these two young men there with the shaved heads, my disciples? You want my blessings? You shave your head like that, and put on those robes. That's my blessings." And the young men got scared and excused themselves very quickly. They went back to their compartment. That kind of blessing they didn't want. And they wanted some dust up sprinkled on their heads, a magic wand. But the real blessing of, become my disciple, shave your head, that they didn't want. So The standard procedure is serve, hear, satisfy, and get real blessings. Not to grab dust and demand some superficial blessings. I want to have a son. I want to be successful in business. Bless me, please. Bless me for material things. What's the use of that? Misusing the sadhu who can give you love of God, and you're asking him for some money or some material sense gratification. That's not a good idea. Narada is not foolish like that. He didn't, like the children in the villages, ask for pencils or toffees from the devotees. Pencil, pencil, pencil. No, he didn't bother the sadhus for some silly material thing. And therefore they gave him love of God. Because he wasn't a silly boy demanding something material. He was coming to do his service quietly and try to satisfy the Vaishnavas. And they gave him their real blessings. Taste, ruchi, taste to hear and chant about Krishna. That taste is much more valuable than a whole truckload of pencils or toffees or all the money in the world. And Narada Muni is being given that highest gift. All he did was a little bit of simple service and got to eat some prasadam off their plate, and now he'll listen to the Bhagavatam class, and that's all. That's his whole sadhana. And he achieves the whole perfection of life. So we may have to do a few more things. Our guru may tell us, go out and sell books in the street, or go back to your job and work, or take care of your children. Other things besides what Narada had to do. But that's also our devotional service, our sadhana. Whatever it is, if we do it and satisfy our spiritual masters, they'll bless us and we'll also get love of God. But we have to satisfy them, not just demand some superficial blessings. Okay, so I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Jadu Thakur. He was also a Shudra.
So what is the etiquette?
Well, the strict etiquette is that a sannyasi should not leave any remnants. And you shouldn't be grabbing things off of people's plates if you want to follow etiquette. But we forget the etiquette. Get the prasadam however you can. The strategy how to get it is don't ask. If you ask, you'll be refused. Maybe. There's a risk of being refused if you ask. Better is to steal it. Yeah. Like what was his name, Kalidas?
Yeah.
He just snuck around and got everybody's prasadam. He didn't, he was clever, he didn't just ask everybody so they could refuse him. If you ask a Vaishnava for his remnants, he's going to be embarrassed and refuse. So you just wait until he's done and grab his plate. Okay?
Sometimes the senior Vaishnava to make up the etiquette
to leave any remnants. Then you have to give him so much that he can't finish it. Like disciples, the guru comes to visit once a year in some faraway place and they make a mountain of prasadam for him. Part of the reason is they can all get the Mahaprasad. Yes?
Here, in Prabhupada said that if one will think from the simple activities, then he can develop his attraction towards the Krishna. So the same has been Bhagavad Gita on the
Yes.
So, but the devotional service is beyond the seen and the pious. So, what that process is?
Pure devotional service is beyond sin and piety. But unfortunately, we who are trying to practice pure devotional service, some of us are not yet beyond sin and piety. That means we're not up to the standard yet of pure devotional service. Therefore, we have to go through the stage of anarcha nivritti. We have to give up these disqualifications. We have to give up any attachment we have to anything sinful and anything pious, anything materially pious. You know, I'm attached to being a Brahmin. I'm attached to being a scholar. I don't want to go out and wash pots or go on the street and preach to people. I'm in the mode of goodness. That's also contamination. I'm a Brahmin. I can't do shudra work, washing the pots, sweeping the floor. Even though he's a servant of Krishna, you may refuse because you're a Brahmin. Yeah. So the punya can also be has to be given up also. The papa and the punya. Nashta payeshu abandveshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. So because we are contaminated, the process is pure, but we're impure. And therefore we don't fit the process. We're not fit for it. We have to become pure, and then we can fully engage in the process. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. It's accomplished. We become free from all of our anarthas, unwanted bad habits. Bad habits of punya and papa. By constant or regular service to the Bhagavats, this Bhagavat and the devotee Bhagavat, the book Bhagavatam and the devotee Bhagavatam, by serving both of them every day, all of our life. It's our regular business every day. Just like a boy has to go to school every day, a man has to go to work, the housewife has to cook for her family every day. There's no vacation. The family has to eat every day. The money has to be earned every day except for a few vacation days. So we have to serve the book Bhagavatam and the devotee Bhagavatam every day of our whole life. And when we're in that habit, then we can quickly give up all of our anarthas. Then we become free from punya and papa, and then only can we fully engage in devotional service without deviation, without hesitation. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma. Then we become transcendentally situated, satisfied in our hearts, prasanatma. Nashochati nakamshati. Then we're not in the mode of ignorance, lamenting, or in the mode of passion, hankering. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu. Then we're in goodness and beyond goodness. Equal to everybody. Madhvakti mavate param. Then you can actually begin devotional service. The higher stages of devotional service. Nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema. That kind of devotional service we can begin only when we become free from punya and papa. Is that okay? Yeah. You know, the non-devotees think you have to suffer your sins and experience your good punya. And there's no way to avoid it. But we think you can avoid both. You can skip over the suffering and the enjoying of your prarabdha karma by shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, vishnam. Chanting, remembering, and especially doing lots of service for the pleasure of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, then your prarabdha karma can be fried to a crisp and just destroyed. You don't have to experience it by the special potency of pure devotional service. Aparabdha palam karma kutam bijam palam karma kamenai vai ete paliyante Vishnu bhakti ratatmana. For those who are actually attracted to the service of Lord Vishnu, all the different kinds of karma, bad and good, on all the different stages, prarabdha karma, which means the sinful reactions or the pious reactions that have already manifested. I have a malecha body, you know, body of an antyaja, outcast, because of my prarabdha karma. And how am I going to get rid of that? I'm stuck with this body for as long as I live in this body. Prarabdha karma is not easy to get rid of. I can't just, you know, I can take my shirt off, but I can't take my body off. I'm stuck with it. For another 25, 30 years, I'll be living in this body. So prarabdha karma is usually not easy to get rid of. You have to live through it and just suffer it. But Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service, can destroy even that prarabdha karma. And what to speak of the karmic reactions that have not yet manifested, the ones that are sitting dormant in the heart and have not yet fructified. They're easy to get rid of. Jarayat Kapiladeva tells his mother, Jarayat Yashu Yap Kosham Nigirna Manambo Yata. Just like the fire of digestion in a man who has a good appetite, it can easily digest all the food he eats if he has a voracious appetite. Like that, the pure devotional service, the fire of pure devotional service, burns away our subtle body, which is the result of our subtle and gross body, that's the result of our prarabdha karma. And that means that all our sins and piety are burned away just by practicing devotional service. Okay? Special potency of devotional service to do that. Because ordinary punya, ordinary karma, jnana, yoga, they can't do that. They can get rid of the aprarabdha, the karma that's not yet manifest. But manifest karma, you have to suffer. If you're a yogi, a jnani, a karmi, but if you're practicing pure devotional service, then you can get rid of even your prarabdha karma, even your manifest karma, even your bad body, your bad mind, your other obstacles in life, the people in your family and the people around you who give you trouble, all of that can be solved easily. If you just become enthusiastic about pure devotional service, all your problems can be solved easily. They'll just melt away. Okay? Hare Krishna. Anything else? Madhavi? Yes.
My question is about the faith and conviction.
Yes.
Sometimes, on very honest introspection, I see that I don't reach the threshold of being fully convinced.
Yes.
So, how does the conviction come?
To develop your conviction, you really should associate with people who have strong conviction. Strong conviction for the thing that you want to become convinced about, you should associate with people who are convinced about it already. Then, as Prabhupada says in the beginning of the purport, devotional service is just as infectious as a contagious disease. So get infected by the enthusiasm of those who have it. That's the recommendation. You know about fascism. The fasces is a symbol from the Roman Empire. All it is a bundle of sticks tied together with a rope. The idea is, it's the symbol of the Roman Republic, that one man doesn't have much strength, but if you put everybody together and they cooperate, then the whole community is very strong. So the associated devotees who share their strength, they become much stronger than any one individual. So you should be in the association of devotees, and then you can share, your conviction will become, you know, added together, and it'll be as strong as, you know, much stronger than any one person's conviction. Okay? Right.
Prabhupada is saying such evidence may be taken even without conviction of pure devotees. But in the next line he points out that there are sometimes pseudo devotees and one should be very much cautious about them. So does this pseudo devotees include the neophytes or what exactly is
No, a neophyte is not a pseudo devotee. Pseudo devotee means a cheating devotee, someone who poses as a devotee but isn't one. A fraud, an imposter. So a neophyte devotee, I hope he's not an imposter. If he's honest and doesn't pretend to be more than he is, then he's not pseudo. Sometimes neophytes, or sometimes often neophytes, think they're better than they are. They think they're very advanced sometimes. But that's just immaturity, childish. It's not taken too seriously. It's not offensive, it's just childish. And soon enough they learn that they're not the best devotee in the world. But someone who's a hypocrite and is dressing like a devotee and taking disciples and sitting on a big seat, and he has no love for Krishna, he's dishonest, he doesn't practice what he preaches, he's doing all sorts of sinful things although he's posing as a guru, that's what we're talking about. Pseudo-devotees are not actually devotees at all. They may be Mayavadis or plain materialists. You see, go to Vrindavan, even here in Delhi you see, so many advertisements. Saptaha, Gyana, Yajna. So many, you see the faces, they're obviously materialists in Mayavadis, these people. You see their faces on the posters, on the boardings. So those are, I'm not saying all of them, but that, very common. People are doing Bhagavatam business just to make money and reputation. And they lack actual devotion for Krishna. They're not doing it for service, they're doing it for business. That's pseudo-devotee. Especially if they're actually very materialistic, or they're actually plain Mayavadis, and actually don't believe that the personality of Godhead is the absolute truth. They think that the absolute truth is ultimately impersonal, and they just use the personality like a mask, as a front for their impersonalism. That's hypocrisy, deception, and so we call them pseudo-devotees. The materialist and the impersonalist who pose as devotees, that's what Prabhupada is talking about. Okay? Neophytes are excused. They're just immature, but they're sincere.
Can you explain what the word
Well, anarthi nirviti means to give up all your deviant behavior and attitudes. So, you could say, yes, it automatically is accomplished when you do the process correctly. But it has to be completely correctly. Not just partly correct, if not just intermittently correct. Correct some of the times, and sometimes you go off on a tangent. No, it has to be all the time correct and completely correct. So that's not easy. Because we're attached to our narthas. We're not so ready to give them up. We're addicted to them. So therefore, narthi nirviti can take a long time. It can take decades. We can reach that stage fairly quickly. Go up to the beginning of narthi nirviti. We meet the devotees. We become attracted to prasadam and to hearing the kirtan and dancing and in a few weeks we can, become a devotee ourselves. And then we, get initiation after a year. And then we start the process of anartha nivritti. And we seem to go on with anartha nivritti for decades. That's common because we have a lot of anarthas, but mainly because we're not so ready to give them up. We're attached to them. So we've got strong habits and addictions from our past life. But if we're ready to make a radical change in our life and to really dedicate ourselves, then we can go through that stage relatively quickly. If we're really determined and ready to do anything necessary. Narada Muni went through that stage in a couple of weeks. It can be done. Okay, but I'm sorry, you had something.
Your divine self reiterated that one can, it doesn't take months, years, or decades together to get the true devotion of the Lord Krishna.
Yes.
This can be achieved just in few days or 18 days at the minimum.
Yes.
Out of just my curiosity, I wanted to know, any worldly living, any old saint, I wanted to know out of my curiosity any person, particular name, who had achieved this train in a minimum period.
Well, I do know some God brothers who
Because we have come across many names who rather spend years together in worshipping and then they are given that very thing.
Yeah, usually it takes decades. Practically a whole lifetime, usually. So, yes, as far as actually achieving the cessation of all bad habits, normally for people in the modern age, you can expect it will take a good part of your life. Say 30 years at least, on the average, to perfect your chanting and become past the stage of an arhat individual. You want an average, at least 30 years. If not, twice as much. Depends on how serious you are. That's just, say statistically because of the condition we're in the modern age, how bad off and how contaminated we are, and how disqualified we are for spiritual practice. But I have seen, although it's not, doesn't mean that they've attained an arhatini vritti, but I've seen case histories of my godbrothers in the beginning years of ISKCON, who, after serving Prabhupada for a few weeks or a few months, made great advancement. Maybe not all the way up to the stage of anarthas, because some of them are not with us anymore. So they had some anarthas, and those anarthas dragged them away, okay. But still, they became very serious devotees, and were able to assume great responsibilities for carrying on Prabhupada's mission after a few weeks or a few months of just practicing. So I've seen many cases like that, devotees who must have been practicing this Krishna consciousness in their previous life, to be able to jump right into serious devotional service very quickly. I've seen it. And it happens even nowadays. Some devotees just come off the street and they're doing better service than everybody else in the temple, almost immediately. It's their past vasanas or samskaras. They were doing this in their previous life and they're just getting back to where they were before. So some individuals, but especially because of having practiced in the previous life already, having already gone up to the certain stage. Okay? Hare Krishna. We should chant as much as we can, whenever we can, whether we're getting a strong taste or not. You want a taste, then practice more and more. The more you chant, the more you do the practice of chanting, the quicker you'll get that taste. And love means to do what you're doing for the pleasure of the person you love, not for your own pleasure. So whether I'm getting ecstasy from my chanting or not, I should be concerned that Krishna is happy with my chanting. Now, I may not be experiencing happiness, but Krishna is happy that I'm trying to serve him. That's the first thing that should matter to a devotee. What's stopping you? Just lack of conviction. So I can just decide this material life is useless. I'm not going to have anything to do with it anymore. I'm not going to cooperate with anybody who wants me to engage in material affairs. I'm going to simply serve Krishna. And if you make up your mind like that and are fully convinced, then you're perfect in 1 second. But we're not convinced. We're half convinced, 1% convinced, 1/10 of 1% convinced. And therefore it takes longer. But all it requires is becoming perfectly convinced that if I simply serve Krishna, everything will be accomplished. Okay, that can be done very quickly.
One more question.
Yes, please.
This conviction, is it because of one's own effort or should one wait for it as a result? For example, I can make an effort, I can make a strenuous effort.
It comes largely by the blessing of the Lord and his devotees. But we should make an effort. To attract the blessings, we should make an effort. Although it's not our effort that will accomplish, especially accomplish getting faith and attraction. That comes by being blessed by the Lord and by his devotees. But the way to attract those blessings is to make an effort. Okay? Okay, is there anything else? Okay.
In another liberty you mentioned that it is basically our own bondage to those matas. We are attached to them mostly. So one might have one's own attachments and get kicks out of those attachments. One doesn't, even by practicing devotional service, one doesn't want to get rid of those attachments. One is very strongly attached to those attachments.
Yes.
All the same, one might endeavor to serve one's guru.
Yes.
So does this second process of trying to serve guru of its own will help us get over the attachments?
Yes. The attachments will make it harder to enthusiastically serve. The attachments get in the way. But on the other hand, if we serve anyway, despite our inertia, we just overcome our inertia and serve enthusiastically, then that will gradually dissolve all the attachments. An enthusiastic service attitude. The best way to counteract our hesitation. Okay. Just be enthusiastic. Prabhupada was asked, how can you become enthusiastic? And he said, just be enthusiastic. Just do it. Practice it. Pretend to be enthusiastic. Okay.
Yes. If one would do some effort for preaching the Krishna consciousness, then the devotee can achieve this whole world. If one devotee, dedicated devotee,
yes,
preach the Krishna consciousness throughout the world,
yes,
then we can comfort the whole world.
Yes, Prabhupada said this Krishna consciousness movement can spread like wildfire. We can conquer the world in 18 days, he said in that lecture. Yeah, if we become more enthusiastic and more convinced, the preaching can become much more effective and quicker. Ken?
What type of effort we should have to do?
First of all, an effort to love Krishna. If we have love for Krishna, then people will be attracted. If we don't have love for Krishna, not even any of it, then no matter what we do, why will anybody want to join us? Yeah. Even if we have all the biggest buildings in the world, and we're, so many things, but the thing that will attract people is love of God. That's what they're coming for. So if we have love of God, that will be the most effective preaching tool. We should make an endeavor to develop that love of God. Then our preaching will take over the world like wildfire. Okay.
What does love of God mean? That this tenure of high school, what does it mean? Because we do sometimes things, chanting, dancing, like surfing, and all the things we do. But sometimes we feel that there is also a vacuum, that we are not close to Krishna, we are not feeling that kind of thing that we are serving Krishna.
Well, you will only know when you experience it. You have to see it with your own eyes.
taste it with your own tongue. And I can't tell you because I haven't tasted it. So it has to be experienced, but that's our illusion. That's Maya telling us that we're very far away from Krishna, that we're in a vacuum. Actually, Krishna is sitting in our heart. Actually, Krishna is guiding our life at every step, but we think we're in Maya. We think we're, you know, separate from Krishna. That's our illusion. We think we can never have love of God, because love of God is a million light years away. But it isn't actually as necessarily as distant as we think it is. We have to overcome some difficulties, but they're not impossible, and it doesn't have to take forever to do that. Yes. You mean that you shouldn't have love for any other person? No, I'm sorry, I didn't understand that part yet.
I mean, like you love some other person.
Yes.
Have some feelings for that. We
yes.
Want to do something for that. We
yes.
Talk to them like that. And love for Krishna means what? And you doing services for him.
Doing whatever will make Krishna happy. And wanting to do that and nothing else. That's love. Just like love of anybody else.
Does whatever services we render to Krishna, if those services give us pleasure, that means we have nice feelings for him?
If we get pleasure, that's just secondary. That's a byproduct. The important thing is that Krishna gets pleasure. That's a success.
Okay.
Then Krishna is giving us pleasure. That's his business, if he wants to give us pleasure. How do we know that Krishna is pleased? When you're fully satisfied, when you have no anxiety, and all your material desires are gone, you must have pleased Krishna. It can't be accomplished by any material means. You become completely free from anxiety and material desires. When your heart is peaceful and pure, then you know that you must have satisfied Krishna. Yatashna takshu, bhakti mukti, bhakti pushti, oh, what is it? When you're practicing devotional service, you develop pushti. No, that's a different verse. I'm sorry, I'm mixing things up. Tushti pushti kshudapayo nugasa. Just like a man who sits down to eat a meal, he's hungry. How does he know that he's not hungry anymore? No problem, it's immediate experience. Put the food in your mouth, swallow it, and then you feel satisfaction very quickly. And then, you know, when you digest it, you'll be nourished. And also, very quickly, your hunger goes away. If you fill your stomach with food, you're not going to feel hungry anymore. You may even feel like you never want to eat again if you eat too much. So like that, the process of devotional service goes through phases of becoming firmly determined, feeling ecstasies, developing actual love of God, these various stages. You don't have to wonder, how will I know when I reach them? Any more than you have to wonder, how do I know that I'm satisfied after eating? It's an immediate experience.
If somebody eats something, he himself is satisfied. The same way, if we serve Krishna, if we feel satisfaction, then we can know that Krishna is happy.
Well, but constant satisfaction, not momentary satisfaction that shifts into dissatisfaction, but the satisfaction that isn't interrupted by any dissatisfaction. Constant. Then we know we must have done the right thing, and Krishna must be pleased. If you're satisfied day and night, most people cannot remember one day in their whole life when they were happy all day, for one day, for 24 hours. Think of one day in your life where you didn't experience some anxiety or distress. You can't. But when you go on day after day with no anxiety, no frustration, then you must have attained the love of God. And that's actually just a superficial symptom. Actually, it's so obvious when you actually attain it.
Yeah.
to be immersed in the ocean of the nectar of devotion. Like we're, it's thrown into the ocean, you know it. You don't have to speculate, am I in the ocean or not? So when you're thrown into the ocean of nectar devotion, there's no need to wonder about it, whether you've attained it or not. It becomes very obvious. But a simple symptom that you can look for is that you can go a whole day without experiencing any anxiety. No, the desire doesn't stop. The perfect devotee has lots of desires, but desires for Krishna's pleasure. No selfish desires. No inappropriate desires. Only appropriate desires, and they're all centered on Krishna's satisfaction. The devotee has more desires, but they're all for Krishna's pleasure. Okay. Shraddha is preliminary. Shraddha shabde vishvas kohi sudridham nishchay. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya explains. The word Shraddha means firm conviction. It's an idea. The idea that if I simply serve Krishna, everything I want and everything I need will be accomplished. So you can say it's mental. Whereas nishtha is a determination of the heart. It's not just of the mental thing. The shraddha is preliminary. It's at the beginning of devotional service. But nishtha is the gateway into the upper stages of devotional service. And in nishtha you're absolutely convinced. Absolutely convinced that everything should be done for Krishna's pleasure. And if you do it, then nothing will go wrong. So it's on a different level. And it's coming not just a mental conviction, but with your whole heart and soul, you're absolutely convinced. That Shraddha is enough to get you started, but the Nishtha is what fixes you and gets you to the point where you can't turn back. You can't stop. You just have to progress and reach the perfection. Okay? Thank you. Okay, we can stop now. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.